Computer. Okay, good morning and welcome to the Poetry Show on Enlighten Radio. By the way, we are accessible at all times on www.enlightenradio.org, except in periods of maintenance, which do happen. And the podcast that we record from this live broadcast here are available, well, they should be available faster than they have been the past week, on podcasts.enlightenradio.org. And you can always see our what's playing at player.enlightenradio.org. So welcome this morning. And Janet has picked out some poems to discuss here that are short by and large, and but nonetheless quite provocative. So it gives us a chance to reflect upon them. Anyway, Janet, take it away. Good morning.
The first thing I want to talk about is the first four lines of Augury of Innocence by William Blake, which you see quoted a lot. And it's opening, so these I think of as poems of attention, poems of paying attention to things that you don't normally pay attention to. So we're going to just release our concerns, our worries, our whatever's pressing on you, and just pay attention to some poetry for the next half hour or so. And the first is the first four lines of Auguries of Innocence by William Blake, the visionary poet. What were his dates? Do you know, John?
Oh, 17. Well, during the American Revolution,
okay.
Him and Tom Paine were good friends. So 1776. Let's go there.
Okay. So this is the first four lines of Augury of Illness, Auguries of Innocence by William Blake. And I'm going to read it, pause, and then read it again. To see a world in a grain of sand, and heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour.
Right.
Just think about that for a moment. To see the world in a grain of sand, and heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, an eternity in an hour.
So that is a godlike perception.
Or a mystical perception, at least. Looking at a grain of sand and seeing the whole world, holding a wildflower and seeing heaven, the idea that you could cup infinity in the palm of your hand and have all of eternity in an hour. It's a way of, it's, you're not looking at things in the normal way.
It's true in so many ways, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the mathematical kind of joke about the coastline of Maine? That, well, its length changes substantially based on how short your rule of measure becomes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that in a sense there's an infinity while it's like the number of rational numbers between zero and one, okay, right? So
mm-hmm.
I mean there are many ways to express, am I thinking a similar thought?
To me, it was just a way that if you look at a grain of sand closely enough, a whole world opens up to you. If you look at a wildflower closely enough, heaven opens up to you. You know, if you just go into the state where there's no time, you can hold infinity in your hand and have eternity, even though it's only been an hour. It is, to me, it was like sort of like an altered state of mysticism. Way of looking at the reality beyond the reality.
Well, you know, there are certainly times when people feel like time speeds up, and events happen, or dramatic events happen faster, you know, and in succession, or sometimes overwhelming. This is interesting. This came up in the discussion last night a little bit about how people feel overwhelmed. That it feels like, you know, the sky might be falling. And, you know, that there's a lot of instability in the country and division. And, you know, I think, like Josh Short last night, he said last night, I'm worried about my country. And, you know, you could feel in the room this thing about there's something, you know, you're the grain of sand. And there's, you know, there's something, you know, that is perhaps indifferent to your fate that is at work, and things are speeding up, or things are seeming more uncertain. I don't know, maybe that's not the same thing. But I love the dimensionality in that poem. And you, when you sent it to me last night, and I don't remember how long ago it was, I parts of it are very familiar. It's a very long poem. And he does this, I guess, if you were doing these things that he's doing there about there's two dimensions, multiple dimensional ways of looking at almost everything and that you can see or feel. And he goes on for thousands of words doing the same thing. It just was magnificent. And makes his point. It's kind of a dialectical point, you know, that, you know, anything you see is almost infinitely complex because it's what it was, it's not what it was the instant before, and it's not what it's going to be an instant from now. Right. I mean, there's that aspect to time. And if you can't look at it, you got to look at it both. Even if you look at it on every side, you still probably can't grasp its motion except by experiencing it. It's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Give us another example.
Another example. I don't know if I can give you another example, but it's more of a feeling. That there's more to reality than is on the surface. And if you pay close attention, who knows what might open up to you. And the other poems are going to talk about that same moment where you feel like you're on the brink of grasping something larger than the appearance.
Does meditation achieve or seek to achieve a state where you're more open to this sense of things? I mean, this attention, right? To
yes,
right. okay, yeah.
So it just seemed to me they're just really evocative lines. I don't pretend to understand them. I don't pretend to even know what Blake meant when he wrote them, but that's what they mean to me. I mean, to me, they mean that there's more possibilities than we're aware of.
You know, Blake is a poet that probably, as much as anybody in English anyway, expressed the you want to call it the cultural explosion that took place, you know, in between the American, French, and British revolutionary periods that kind of corresponded there with the decline and actual overthrow of feudalism in Europe. And a system of relations that had existed for 1,000 years collapsed within 100 and 200 years. Okay. And, you know, it was one of those, the sky is falling kind of moments, right? And so I think Blake, you know, gives lots of expression, you know, to the altered sense of reality that those changes engendered, you know, in the late 18th and well, and continuing actually, as it's the whole thing spread around the world.
He was saying also there's something eternal that lasts despite the change.
Yes, he was. That's true. He was searching for what would it, you know, I think a lot of romantic poetry is seeking that, and okay, the great chain of being that was the, you know, the mandate of heaven that the government or the church represented has fallen apart. Where is, you know, what is it that sustains us? And now. So interesting. Yeah. I mean, he does that more than Wordsworth or Coleridge or, well, Coleridge is, you know, I think under the influence at times when he's writing.
But, yes.
But Blake is just straight out there. You know, he's flirting with all the revolutionary trends of that era, all the new culture, you know, I mean, free love, whatever. I mean, all these things that were certainly not written about in earlier.
Well, certainly there's nobody quite like Blake.
Right.
But the same idea that there's more than you can see on the surface appears in a very different poet, in a very different era, in a very short poem called Flower in a Cranied Wall by Alfred Lord Tennyson, who no one could call a mystic. But here is this little poem. Flower in the cranied wall, I pluck you out of the crannies. I hold you here, root and all, in my hand. Little flower, but if I could understand what you are, root and all in all, I should know what God and man is. So since it's short, I'll read it again. Flower in the cranied wall, I pluck you out of the crannies. I hold you here, root and all, in my hand. Little flower, but if I could understand what you are, root and all in all, I should know what God and man is.
Right. Yeah.
It's the same feeling here, I think, of if you just look at a flower deeply enough, you'll learn more than just what that flower is. He says you'll know what God and man is. And those are big concepts from just a little flower in a wall.
Right. You know, it's interesting. It's, you know, how is your, if your comprehension could grasp it all.
Yes.
It would be a godly comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
At least as he imagines a divine presence.
I thought that was interesting coming from a very different poet, the sort of same idea that you could look at the flower and in Blake poem you see heaven, and this poem you learn what God man is if you study a flower deeply enough and comprehend it enough.
Right. It's you know, it's an inspiration for a, you know, for science, right? I mean, a scientist finds wonders, you know, in particles smaller than an atom.
Yes.
So.
Or wonders in particles as huge as galaxies. You know, whether you go out as far as you can or in as far as you can, you have wonders and very strange phenomena that are different from Newtonian mechanics.
Right. And didn't Tennyson famous for the Charge of the Light Brigade?
He wrote a Charge of the Light Brigade. Is that Tennyson? I'm blanking.
He wrote
a lot of narratives. He wrote Idylls of the King.
Right. Okay.
and some other poems, but he but this is just a little short thing that is that I think is very interesting. I found when I was looking up attention. I was looking it up for poems of attention.
You know, I when I was reading about it, the poem, when I looked it up myself last night, and apparently it has a very tight both rhyming and accented structure.
Yes, it's very formal.
Because it has a very unusual rhyme scheme, I think, you know, that
wall rhymes with all, crannies with is, and ham with understand.
Yeah, so it's like
so it's not a typical rhyme scheme.
No, no. I wonder if it's I know there were periods where poets paid a lot of attention to rhyming schemes. Shakespeare was no stranger to experimenting a little bit with that. It was, you know, quite a bit, you know, so, but
this is a very tight,
but you don't notice it. It's inside. You don't notice it when you read it. It's not, I guess you would hear it depending on the accents. It might sound a little different, but it's very short for Tennyson. He seemed I seem to recall him being windier.
I think he's known more for his narrative poetry than for his lyric poetry. But this is a short little lyric poem.
I had a professor in English once that thought he was pedestrian, quote unquote. I don't know. I don't remember all the reasons why he thought that, but he was good teacher because he had strong opinions that he would, you know, lay on you when he was going through writers, right, and challenge you to read it and, you know, agree or disagree, you know. So he was a little bit provocative and fun to write for. I remember him, but I don't remember why. He really didn't like Tennyson that much. What's next on our menu of these poems of attention?
A poem called Aware by Denise Levertov, who's a contemporary, well, not really contemporary now, but was a more recent poet than Tennyson, or a more modern poet than Tennyson or Blake. Also with mystical tendencies at times in her poetry. And this one is just a little poem called Aware. When I opened the door, I found the vine leaves speaking among themselves in abundant whispers. My presence made them hush their green breath, embarrassed, the way humans stand up, buttoning their jackets, acting as if they were leaving anyway, as if the conversation had ended just before you arrived. I liked the glimpse I had, though, of their obscure gestures. I like the sound of such private voices. Next time, I'll move like cautious sunlight. Open the door by fractions. Eavesdrop peacefully. And this is from The Great Unknowing by New Directions Press, 1999.
Right.
Denise Levertov, the poem is Aware.
So you can hear the conversation of the plants.
Yes, she almost overhears them. So again, it's as if there's something going on underneath our awareness.
Right, right.
In this poem, it's something specific. It's the plants talking among themselves.
But it's great the way she finds, social metaphors, you know, like the conversation that, you know,
looks like the enter the room and the humans stand up, buttoning their jackets, acting as if they were leaving anyway, as if the conversation ended just before you arrived.
You know, she finds other ways of letting you listen in on the same thing. You know, but that's very clever, very very good. It's an interesting way of trying to communicate a gesture.
Yes.
You know, like for example, it reminds me. One of the things that worked last night, for example, and I hadn't been in one of these kind of classes for a long time, but it was a moment like that in that poem. So people are asking, well, you know, they really want to know, you know, how do you do this, right? And what does it mean, you know, to go make a demand for recognition and stuff like that. And so I remember I told him this story about the first time that ever happened to me, where we after a lot of work, we had a very unusual committee, and we went in and asked for recognition, and we were all scared to death. We all thought we're going to be fired, most likely, you know, in the next few minutes. And I remember I was supposed to be the spokesperson for it, and my mouth was so dry I could barely you know, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to put out the words that we'd planned to say, right? But right when I was doing that, you know, the boss, you know, who was sitting across the table, and he had three lawyers behind him and everything, and he lit a cigarette, but from the wrong end. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody started laughing in the midst of this, what was, you know, looking like a tense adversarial business confrontation of some sort. And it was a thrill for the employees, especially, okay, but even for the boss himself, okay. I mean, no one's gonna die here, okay. We're gonna have and it was but I thought that, you know, so when I was telling that story, and I could tell everybody got it. Okay. It connected, you know, so that, it's difficult to humanize, you know, problems in perception and things that, and especially you take today with all the media, confusion, which is compared to the old days is like, yeah, oh my God. You know, how do you sense, you know, reality underneath appearances? It's how do you learn to listen for it? You know, that's I guess it's becoming an art.
Well, Denise Levertov counsels next time to move like cautious sunlight, open the door by fractions, eavesdrop peacefully. Cautious sunlight, that's a lovely word. Now, in contrast to Tennyson's poem, this is written in open form. This has got no rhyme scheme, no particular, but it's not without constraints, and it's not without discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it moves very tightly. There's really no extraneous stuff that you would cut out of this poem if you were in a workshop.
When, do you know how long she's been gone?
I think she died in. Let me just look that up.
She was in San Francisco when I lived out in San Jose. I never met her, but I knew people that did know her, and she was. She wrote poems for the West Coast Longshore Unions. Little newsletter occasionally. It's interesting. But so she must have been.
She died in 97.
She died in 97.
She was British born, but a naturalized American poet. And she was a recipient of the Lannan Literary Award for Poetry, which is one of the highest poetry awards in the country. But she was a remarkable poet.
Yeah. Well, I think that's that thing that, right, learning to listen to, learning to pay attention. Wow.
Who knows what you might learn?
They had a very interesting thematic unity to these three poems or excerpts from poems in Blake's case, Janet. So, poems of attention. Is that a category? I don't remember that from my ancient literary education. Is that a new kind of, it's your kind of categorization. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I was looking at we were talking about doing a classic poem. So I was looking at Blake and I stumbled across, those words from All Innocence. And then I started, just noodling around on the internet and came across, reminded myself of the Tennyson poem, which I read, back in high school. Because right. It was short, you could read it in a high school lesson. And then I found the Denise Levertov poem, which was a surprise because it was a poem I was aware of. So it was really, and I have a great assignment for people because I was given this once as an assignment and it was great. You just sit where you're at, where you're listening, and look around and choose some object that, some prosaic object that's around you on your desk or on your table or whatever, and contemplate it for a while and then write a poem about it and maybe something beyond it.
Right. Right.
And I was given that assignment, and what was next to me on the table was a half empty glass of water. And I wrote a very interesting poem about that glass.
Did you return to the is it half empty or half full problem?
No, it had to do with emptiness as a concept and as being full of possibilities. And then following those possibilities.
That's kind of the way bankers look at bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
As an empty glass now. I can get the glass cheap. I don't know. Yeah, I was thinking of, when you said that, I was thinking of Jamie Dimon. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to find a way to, I just thought that was the way Denise Levertov, took the imagined conversation between the plants to not quite, to an imagined but entirely possible set of human gestures, and then back again. I thought that was really very cool. So
very tight poem.
Anyway. Yeah, I'd like to be able to write one like that. I really would.
Yeah, well, so would many of us.
Meditate a little better. Maybe we'll get there. Anyway, well, those are three wonderful poems. I think it's a great theme to ponder, poems of attention, and the process of finding a way where you can get into a state where you kind of are paying attention. And your mind opens up to those relations. It's a gift, and it can happen on any time, any day. You have to. Sometimes it comes upon you without being even invited, and you find yourself inspired. All right, yeah. Should we call it a day, Janet?
I think so. It was a short show today, but these were short poems, and. I hope we gave you something to think about.
All right.
Okay, pay attention everybody. To.
All right. By the way, it's this is Wednesday. Wednesday at 10 a.m. is our regular time for this this show. We had a little disruption during the summertime, but trying to regularize things right now. So we plan on being back here a week from now. And again, check out our podcasts on podcasts.enlightenedradio.org. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything